Well, welcome to Pastor to Pew. I'm Steve Kindle, the director of Pastor to Pew. And today we're going to be talking about John 14, verses 1 through 14, and the very important conversation regarding the nature of Jesus, what he's all about in our world, and what he means not only to us in the church, but to others who would come to Christianity and wonder what's going on with this person. So to help us unravel some of this, I've invited Reverend Dr. Susan Strauss, who is the pastor of the First United Lutheran Church in San Francisco, and she's been there since 2004, and I'm happy to say is a charter member of Pastor to Pew. So welcome, Susan. It's so good to have you with us.
Thank you, Steve. Good to be here.
I'm going to be posting at the end of this video your blog information, how to get to it. One of the reasons I wanted to talk to you was because of the name of your blog. That is, what is the intra-faith conversation? Perhaps you could tell us a little bit about that.
Sure. Oftentimes when I go to interfaith gatherings, discussions, what somebody inevitably will say is what we really need to have is the intra-faith conversation, and that is the discussion among Christians. Now, it could be among people of any religious tradition, but I'm a Christian, so talking with other Christians about how we talk about interfaith matters. Interfaith is doing things with other religions. And in my experience, that when we go out and do things with people of other religions, or simply have someone in our own families, or our children go to school with people of other religions, we have these experiences. But then we come back to our own religion, our own tradition. And so when we walk into church on Sunday, what do we hear that perhaps creates a little bit of dissonance or some question in our mind? And that's when we need the intra-faith, the within. Intra is within. And so we are talking as Christians with Christians, but about interfaith matters. If I can share a story, is that okay to share a story?
Certainly, go right ahead.
Started for me was I did get involved in interfaith activities when I was the pastor, my former congregation back in Buffalo, New York, and we had an adult discussion group, and they wanted to study world religions, and they decided to study Hinduism, which was great, and we were studying and discussing, and at one point I asked if they would like to have a Hindu woman who was part of my interfaith women's group to come and meet with them and talk with them and share her story, and they thought that was great, and we did that. After the session, a member of my congregation, an older woman, came to me and said, can I talk to you? I'm worried about something. And I said, okay. And she said, I loved having our friend here and loved hearing about her religion. I thought it was great. But I'm afraid that if I accept her religion as valid, then I'm betraying Jesus. And to be honest, that's what started me on this whole road of what do we do with Jesus? And writing my book, well, it was my thesis. It was my doctoral thesis. And it really was my own exploration into, for me, what do I do with Jesus? And how do I preach Jesus then? Not in an exclusivistic way. So that is, to me, what the author John Donne calls passing over and coming back. We pass over into another religion and we learn about them, but then we come back to our own, and then we have to talk about it when we come back.
Well, this pericope really sets up that conversation beautifully, mm-hmm. because it really contains much of the material that other religions hold against us in a way. If we present Jesus triumphalistically from 14 verse 6, no one comes to the Father but by me, Christians take it in some cases as the sine qua non. This is what it's all about, and that shuts out all the other religions on the face of it. So just how much of a stumbling block is this scripture in interfaith as well as intrafaith conversation?
Well, in intrafaith conversation, for sure, because I would be willing to wager that every single interfaith workshop or retreat or study that I have done, that question immediately comes up. It's one of the first questions. Somebody raises their hand and you can just bet. I'm not a betting person, but I would bet that they're going to say, well, what do we do about Jesus said, I am the way, the truth, and the life. No one comes to the Father but through me. So it's always there on the table. Not so much coming from other religions. They're more critical of our actions, not so much of our sacred scripture, although sometimes. But within Christianity, we struggle. We struggle with this, and we have questions about this. And I see it as a challenge to us as clergy, as preachers, that we have to do our due diligence in really looking at this issue of how we preach, not only out of our own Christian tradition, but how this is part of our interfaith milieu that we live in. I don't think there's anyone who's not doesn't have some sort of connection to another tradition. I think it's very rare today. I live in the Bay Area, but I also lived in Buffalo, New York, and we had a very healthy, thriving interfaith network. So I think it's everywhere that we need to think about these things.
Well, you shared your story. I'd like to give you a glimpse of mine. I was confronted at one stage with someone I was trying to convert. And he looked me in the eye and he said, Steve, have you never read Martin Buber's I and Thou? Mm. And I had, kind of. And I said, what are you getting at? He said, you're treating me as a thing, as an object. Well, that sent me back to Buber. And I really had, I'd read it, but I didn't get it. And because of Buber, I think I understand now my relationship to other religions. Mm. It's not an adversarial relationship. It's a relationship where if I don't put myself in a position to learn, then I am abusing that relationship. And I can't imagine Jesus as one who would want us to abuse another in that regard. So as I look at these interfaith issues, I come from a perspective of wanting to be aware of something that can help me in my own faith more than I want to convince someone to become of my faith. Not because I don't think we have something to offer, but I think because they have something to offer. And together we can learn from each other. And then if things go one way or another, fine. But if we go into a conversation with the objective being to win a battle, we've lost before we start. So I'm very much interested in this intra-faith conversation because I don't think that people generally talk about our relationship to other faiths within our faith. So how would you start a conversation with someone in the pew about that?
Well, that's the big question. That's the hard question. And I believe that most of us would like very quick and easy answers of when somebody asks the question, well, what do we do about I am the way, the truth, and the life? We want the quick elevator answer. And I'm afraid that it's more complex than that. And in some ways, I think that we each need to, as preachers, as pastors, we need to go through this process ourselves of learning what, how do I feel about this? What do I think about Jesus in light of these things, of another story? So I've actually made a practice. I collect people's answers to the question of what about I am the way, the truth, and the life. So every time I read something, I slip it into my file. And it's quite complex. I mean, it depends which you're coming from. Are you coming from a high Christology, a low Christology? How steeped are you in historical Jesus scholarship, John's theology, and all of those kinds of things? So these are all things to be taken into consideration. My favorite response of all the ones that I've collected has been from Diana Eck, who's the founder of the Pluralism Project at Harvard University. And she describes in her book, I believe it's in Encountering God, I'm pretty sure it is, that she says that that answer, I am the way, the truth, and life, the question, we have to look at what was the question. The question was not, well, how do we think about other religions, Jesus? It was, how do we know where you're going? What are you doing? What are we supposed to do? What's going on, Jesus? And Jesus is responding to their anxiety and their angst over what was going to become of them and what was going to be the way for them into this new life that Jesus was offering. So there's the real question, which is really the question for all of us anyway. So when we put it in terms of, well, what do we do with other religions? Jesus was not, or John, whoever was writing this gospel, was not answering the interfaith or intrafaith question. They were addressing the Christian question. So if we somehow can help a person to get into that space of asking the right question, that might help. But my caution is that we also don't want to dismiss a person's concerns about other religions, because I've heard this happen too, that someone will just say, well, this is for Christians. It's not for other religions. This is just for Christians. And it's very, very unsatisfying for most people. It doesn't help. We have to take their questions seriously. As you said, listening. We listen to that person of what is your concern? What is your experience with other religions? What's going on? Is there somebody in your family? Oh my goodness, my daughter just married a Muslim. What about that? What about the children? I mean, this could be a gateway into some serious, good, pastoral conversation with a person. So I don't believe that these are like quick and easy answers that we have to give people, but they're really entries into longer term conversations. Maybe the pulpit isn't the best place. It depends on your congregation. You got to read your congregation, listen to your congregation too, right? Where are they? Are they ready to hear something like this? You might be able to, you know, begin to do a little teaching, but you have to gauge that too. But take it very seriously that we're treading into pastorally sensitive areas that for a lot of people, pulling out, you know, a staple of their faith, that this is what they have believed all their lives, can cause some people to go into a big spiritual crisis. You have to be ready to like my friend in Buffalo who came to me. It's like, I'm betraying Jesus. What do I do with that? Just be ready. Be ready for anything. Ready for the questions and listen. A lot of listening.
Well, I've done a lot of work as an ally in the gay struggle for equality over the years. And the one thing that worked the best, and really the only thing that really worked well, is getting to know gay people. And I'm thinking the same thing is probably true in interfaith relationships. Once we get to meet these people, we find out that they're really no different than we are in so many ways, that they are struggling with the same issues we struggle with and are as good or not as good as any of the rest of us. And we're kind of all in the same boat, but we have to get to know them in order to really make that work.
And then you find out that they have their own intra-faith issues going on. It's very interesting when you start to listen to them too, of, you know, ask them, what do you all fight about? What do you all argue about? And, and you hear the stories.
Mm-hmm. Well, I think Jesus may have given us an entree, or John, through Jesus in his gospel, gave us an entree to broaden that discussion, because one of the things that he has Jesus say is, you know, if you don't believe me for what I say, then believe me because of the works themselves. And I see that basically as saying that the Christian faith, or faith in Jesus, is self-actualizing. It's self-authentic. In other words, it works for you. As the psalmist said, taste and see that the Lord is good. Now, blessed are those who have found him. And so Jesus is saying, try it. You know, you'll like it. And if that isn't true of all adherence to other faiths, it works for them. It's self-authenticating. It makes their lives worth living. So I don't know that Jesus is necessarily all that exclusivist, if in fact he's basically saying, be a part of the movement and see if it's for you, and if it is, then you will believe.
Mm-hmm. That's a great way of putting it. I also come at it as someone who has really appreciated the work of the Jesus Seminar and in other works of helping to distinguish between the historical Jesus and the Christ of faith.
Mm-hmm.
And with John's gospel, with that high Christology that I used to struggle with, I used to have such a hard time with the gospel of John and all those I am sayings. And yet now I've really come to love those sayings because I don't take them literally anymore. Mm-hmm. And so thinking about the way, what is the way in this much more cosmic or universal sense, that for me, the way is much bigger than the historical Jesus. And if I think of Christ, I can think of Christ in other ways, Buddha nature, the Tao, the universe, whatever someone might call that, that I believe that Christ, that cosmic Christ, is the way. And everyone can be in that way. And that is the way, but I don't have to call that Jesus. For me, Jesus has shown me that way, but I make that distinction, and I try to make that distinction in my preaching and even in liturgy and helping with language to help people to understand that Christ is much bigger than the human Jesus. And I think that's a way of getting into this text.
Well, when I was a fundamentalist in my youth, I heard this verse, I am the way, the truth, and no one comes to the Father but by me.
Yeah.
I've learned to hear it a different way, of course. I'm the way, the truth, and the life. No one comes to the Father but by me, meaning that if you appropriate Jesus' way of life, of his faith that he had in God, you too will find your way to God. And anybody can do that. But I also want to season it with the notion of the Logos, which to John and his Greek contemporaries was a mediator between God and humanity. And that mediator is not restricted in any sense to a particular person.
That's right, yeah.
So John offers us an abundance, as it were, of ways that we can approach Jesus' view of God and make it our own without having to deny anybody else's understandings and enrich ourselves because of it. And I, too, have had this struggle with John. And I've come through about the same place you have, I guess. I love the gospel. It's wonderful. But if you take it literally, I think you destroy it. And when John starts out by saying Jesus' first public act was to cleanse the temple, you know you're not dealing with a literal version of Jesus' life, you know.
Well, and then all the other I am sayings also, just understanding the theology behind that of what John is trying to do here. And those metaphors, we don't take them literally. You know, Jesus is not a vine. Jesus is not a gate. I think one of my favorite passages in the Bible is I am the vine, because it's the interconnectedness of everything connected to the source. But you don't take it literally, you take the meaning from it. And it's the same with I am the way, the truth, and the life. And we've got to put it into that context of John's theology and John's Christology to really help people to understand that that's what's going on here. Now, of course, in progressive churches, we might have an easier time of helping people understand that we're not taking these things literally. But I've also found that in some congregations, not mine right now, but in other congregations, you have the whole gamut of people, the whole continuum of people and how they understand these texts. So even though we're progressive in many areas, people still do have these questions and need to understand how to read them in a not literal way.
Well, you certainly have helped me today, and I'm sure our viewers also received a lot of good from our conversation today. It's been wonderful having you here, and I look forward to down the road another conversation, probably about something totally different, but just as enjoyable.
Love to.
Thanks again.
All right. Thanks, Steve. Bye-bye.
Happy Easter.
Happy Easter to you.
Susan, that was magnificent.
Oh, thank you.
Oh, I loved it.
I hope so.